Hey, this is LOA Today, the Law of Attraction show. Truth, because I'm happy. Clap along if you know what happiness is to you. Welcome to LOA Today. Walt Heason and Joel Elston here on this Thursday, January the 14th, 2016. And today we're going to do something, once again, a little bit inventive, a little bit unusual, and we aren't even sure we can do it, but we're going to try. We're going to try to do a show on positive affirmations, and we're going to see if we can come up, or we're going to see how many we can come up with that would apply to everyone, anyone at any stage of life. I mean, what got me thinking about it, Joel, was wouldn't it have been great if when I was a kid, all I got was positive affirmations instead of lots of no's? And then I expanded it to, well, wouldn't it have been great if the same thing happened in my teen years, and then in my 20s, and then in my 30s? I started to imagine just how I would have had a completely different outlook on life just by having those kinds of positive comments coming into my mind all the time.
And as we believe, that concept of what our thoughts are is what we are, and how the law of attraction works. And if we would have had those from a young age, and it would continued, and we were to continue to pass them to our children, you know, what would that look like? And that would be it would be amazing where we would be if that were the case, and we didn't have this negative inner dialogue that tended to automatically be a default way of thinking. So I like the concept of us trying this, and hopefully we, you know, it gives an idea of what it would look like, and maybe even starting, you know, when I was a child. I was thinking the other day, playing baseball, I was a terrible baseball player. But I've also learned over the years that I'm an athlete, that once I practice and practice and practice, I get pretty good at something. I was made fun of my very first baseball attempt and never played anymore. And so, what if that affirmation would have been, say, you know, that was a really good effort, and you had found something positive about what I was doing, and that would have been an amazing beginning, I think.
What if, here's part of what I'm thinking, what if we actually positively lied to our kids? And by that I mean, yeah. You know, what if we told them, wow, you're fantastic. I've never seen such skill. I mean, look at how far you can throw the ball. Look how far you can hit the ball. And look how fast you run. And you're running faster every day. Can you imagine if the kids got that message?
You see that in other forget the name of the test that was done or the study that was done, but you see that where teachers are told that a student is a very high IQ, and teachers start teaching on that level. And I've actually seen a couple studies where average students were called in and said, look, your test scores were off the chart. We don't know why you're getting C's and B's, when in reality you should be in advance. And I've seen it work that way too.
Sure.
Where they're like, wow. So, I mean, that same concept can apply. And, of course, you're going to have your people that will say, well, no, but, you know, we don't talk about everybody getting a trophy. And then you have that whole crowd that starts discussing that side. But as far as that positive affirmation of where we're at, and, you know, and I think that, at least in my personal opinion, you may disagree, the positive affirmation has to be something that's believable even to the child. If you say, boy, you have an incredible swing, but yet you've swung at the ball 97 times and haven't hit it, that might not be a believable affirmation for the child. But if you could word it where, it, you know, when you learn to connect with the ball, it's going to be amazing because you have such a powerful swing, that would be a positive affirmation that would be believable to the child.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think it's a good idea to tailor it to what's actually going on. Although I think it's also the other side of it, which is that when you tell the child who just swung and missed 97 times, wow, I mean, you're really good. All you just need to do is focus a little bit better because, man, that's a great swing.
Right. Right, exactly. And that gets to the, you know, you see coaches that use that technique, and I haven't seen any studies on this, but I know a lot of coaches that accentuate the positive, and they don't put, you know, they only put people in a position where they have their strengths, and they encourage the strengths. And I've seen other coaches where they think just, you know, ripping people apart and screaming at them and telling them how sorry they are is another way of getting people motivated. And I've heard from both sides, but getting at a deeper, from the deeper point of a bigger picture than even athletics, but what it means in our life, what it means with our self-esteem and the negative self, the negative thoughts we have as an adult, all stem back from that pre-programming as a child. So what would it look like? What would it look like from, you know, even with the different ages, like three, when kids can really start to comprehend stuff? And maybe even before that, but whether you really have an understanding of, you know, I appreciate the fact that my mom, you know, says that I'm really good at this, or I colored within the lines, or I'm really good at talking. All those things start to, at that age, I think, really start to develop what we really, that inner dialogue that we believe in ourselves.
And, yes.
And watching also, that I know this for a fact, even if you're very positive to the child, what inner dialogue what dialogue the adult has going on, the child's observing that as well. Even if it's not directed at them, if the negative stuff is taking place, it's still being role modeled.
Which means that it's really even more important from everybody's perspective for the parent to express positive confidence in the child as much as humanly possible, because the more the parent does that, the more the parent is also self-programming.
Right, and that's what I believe, is you, when you have the concept of dealing with, I was at a training last week where we were talking about the kids that have been through traumas, and you know, the old concept of, you know, you're going to put a chart up on the wall, and you're going to get a certain number of points, and this is how you're going to adjust your behavior. Well, the behavior is emanating from a trauma. So the idea that you're going to take away their cell phone, or you're going to punish them, or you're going to do these other things that in some ways reinforce the trauma versus really expressing the positive is such a, when we, you know, I've worked with kids who said, in our last week's topic, we talked about a young man that's doing extremely well by using this positive psychology law of attraction thinking. It goes beyond what we can imagine when we put that into somebody's life. And I have great parents. I love my parents greatly, but at the same time, you know, I grew up in my mom, before she married who I consider my dad, grew up in a single family situation that was very tough, and she was always fearful of money. She was always fearful of everything, and I spent a lot of my time early getting over fears that I watched my mom have.
That brings two really important points to my mind. The first one is the fact that most parents, excuse me, especially most new parents, not all, but most new parents, particularly the ones who are glad that they have a baby, are very good at talking positives, and they prove that by the way they talk to their baby. You can see it all the time. Now, there are some who aren't quite in that boat and they need some practice, but the good news is that for those who are glad they have the newborn baby, they're demonstrating on a daily basis that they know how to talk positively to their children. All they have to do is apply the same positivity, not the same messages, but the same positivity to the child as he becomes a toddler, and then a small child, and then growing into a larger child, into the teenager, all that kind of thing. It's the same principle. It's just that you tailor the message to where the child is in their development. And then the other thought that comes to my mind is, it's not something that we have to worry about whether or not it was done before. We can start doing it right now. And in fact, I would say it's especially important right now. You mentioned the fact that your mother was basically very fearful of money. I call that the depression mentality. Anyone who had depression-era parents experienced that. I experienced that in a big way. The huge push to be frugal, to be, you know, to almost be stingy about where you spend money, because you never know when you're going to run out, and it's going to be a really bad thing. That's the message that depression-era kids of depression-era parents had growing up. And right now, we've just gone through a major recession. We're set up, we're primed for the same kind of thing to happen, because a whole lot of people are struggling right now. Well, that makes this more important than ever to start focusing right now on putting the positive messages into kids' heads, because it's very likely right now that most of them are getting extremely negative messages about money in their heads. This is the time to start changing the programming.
I agree. And that's such a easy statement to make.
Yes.
But it's something that is, as you and I both know, one of the reasons we have this show is the idea that we know the answer, but it is probably one of the more difficult things to put into play on a consistent basis without having that preconditioned stuff fall back. And
well, let's see if we can come up with some then.
Let's do it.
Right now, let's try to come up with some positive affirmations where money are concerned, or money is perfect. Concerned. So, for instance, the few things that immediately come to mind, instead of saying there's not enough money, we could say things like, money's coming. It's going to be here really, really soon. We're taking steps. We're doing the right thing. We don't even have to worry about the money. It's going to happen. What we have to worry about is taking our daily steps to do what we can do right now, and the money will come.
And that is what I completely agree. I have a belief that money is, I have all the money that I need. I have an abundance of money. Money is something that is no longer a fear of mine. I am in a position that I don't have to worry about it. I'm expecting more. And beyond that, I believe that every time I spend money or give money away, I get more money back. That's become my belief system.
Mm-hmm.
And it very much seems to be playing out that way. So the concept of helping out over Christmas or doing that, I try to remind myself, I have an abundance. This abundance is limitless. I have to do the steps to make it continue to come in. But I have yet, in the last 20 years of my life, I have never been in a situation where I didn't have enough money to handle my situation, whatever that was. I'm relying on that to continue, and I have no evidence that it will not. So my positive affirmation is I have an abundance, and my needs will continue to be met, and I will continue to be able to help people, and that money will continue to flow.
You know, one of the things that motivated me to suggest that we do this show today, Joel, is a book that I read that actually Louise picked it up at the library based on the recommendation of our sister-in-law, Yuona. It was a book about self-talk. And one of the concepts put forward in the book was what happens if you make a recording of your voice or somebody's voice saying all these positive things about whatever it is that you're lacking, you know. So if you're lacking money, instead of lacking money, talking about how much money you've got and the money's just flowing in and all that. Even though it's not true, you play this tape. And then you just play it all day long. Or it could be about health, it could be about relationships, it could be about anything, you know, any area that you feel like you need some help in. You put that down on tape in terms of positives, that it's already here, that, you know, the great relationship is already here, that you're healed, that, you know, your skin is flawless, that inside you feel good. Not only is there no pain, but you feel great. I mean, you feel like you have energy and you're ready to rock and all that kind of thing. And you just make tapes like that, and then you play them throughout the day. And what the researchers found, and also what the author found just through vicarious experience, is you just play it around the house, and she said that she made a tape like that. She played it around the house. Her husband was ignoring the whole thing. He was watching television. But after about 2 or 3 weeks of it, of constantly programming it in the background, even subconsciously, he started having conversations with her about the topics that were on that tape. And he had no intention of participating in this experiment. And that's what the researchers find. The more that we inundate ourselves with the positive messages, it's just the same thing as inundating ourselves with the negative messages, except you get the positive result instead of the negative result, regardless of whether you intend to. You just program yourself.
Exactly. The term neuro-linguistic programming sort of goes on that concept.
Right,
that
NLP,
you program your brain. Mm-hmm. With these positive affirmations, and you know, for example, when I went in to have my gallbladder taken out a few years ago, it was a very it's hereditary. Everybody in my family gets a gallbladder taken out. I go in, have it done. Ironically, in the room right next to me is a man 2 years younger than I am getting his gallbladder taken out. Our perspectives were totally different.
Mm.
I am exceptionally healthy. I I go in at noon. I have my surgery at noon. I get out. The doctor wakes me up. I said, when can I go home? He says, when you are able to walk around the entire top floor of the hospital without stopping, you can go home. I get up, put my shoes on. I walk around the entire top, the whole floor. And he goes, no, you have to stay here a few hours. You have to. And
By the way, how did that feel when you were doing that? Were you in a lot of pain, or was it just easy, or what was it?
It was easy. It was pain. I had conditioned myself to prepare for that.
Yeah. The conditioning. What conditioning did you give yourself?
That positive affirmation. I'm healing at a rate faster than possible, than what most people feel is possible. Because I prepared my body, I'm an athlete, I work out every day, I'm conditioned to do this. This is no different than me recovering from a workout.
Okay.
So that's the mental aspect that I had. Now, this other gentleman, all he could focus on was the severe pain that existed. He was the machine that you have hooked into your veins. You can press a button to get painkiller released every so often.
Mm-hmm.
He was constantly asking for pain medication in between. I never once pushed the button.
And I understand where he's coming from. I know
Absolutely.
How that feels, because you feel totally powerless in that position.
Yeah.
And that's what he was feeling. He was feeling a complete lack of power. You, on the other hand, you had given yourself some training. You had basically put some thoughts in your mind on a regular basis that told yourself you were going to be able to just get up and walk out of there. So you actually, it was easy for you relative to him. It was easier for you to get into that place that said, I can control the way I'm feeling about this.
Absolutely. At 6 o'clock that night, after having the surgery at noon, finally the doctor got tired of me asking what time I had. He said, go home, have somebody come pick you up, go home, and if anything happens, come back to the hospital. I went back for my follow-up, and that was the end. I never took one. Let me back up. I had to take ibuprofen one night because I couldn't sleep. Mm. Outside of that, I never took any of the opiate prescription.
Wow.
I'm not trying to act like I'm Superman. It was my mind that was conditioned to heal that way.
And that's everything.
That's
what we're talking about here. That's everything. So let's talk again for those, because I'm thinking about a friend who was recently diagnosed with liver cancer. And I'm thinking, you know, what if I were going to put a tape together for him, what messages would I give him? I imagine some of them would be something like, my liver is in perfect health. My liver and my gut feels great today. In fact, it feels great every day. What are some of the other messages you would give yourself when you were trying to get yourself in that positive frame of mind?
I changed the power of the pain to, I viewed it as, my body is focusing its extreme healing power, and that's what the pain is. The pain is my body saying, "This is that is what the expenditure was of healing." So pain became a healing sign for me. And so I reprogrammed my brain to accept pain as rapid healing.
Interesting, turning it around, because most of us would treat pain as a negative. You said, wow, the fact that I'm feeling pain means I'm healing. This is fantastic.
Yeah. And I actually got that from this Indian doctor who actually believes that, a Native American Indian doctor, who actually believes that when you medicate away from pain, you slow healing. That pain is actually part of the healing process, and if you learn to manage it mentally, that you heal much faster, and his results support that, and it worked for me as well. So the person that is dealing with the liver issue, I never use the C word, but people that are dealing with liver issues, I would envision my liver, the strength of my liver is amazing. It is overcoming. It is a filter. It's filtering out all the negative. I'm going to eat. I would intentionally eat a lot of greens, a lot of positive, real energetic food. I would then focus and mentally view my liver discarding the negative cells, and regenerating with the positive new cells that don't have any infection or any problems.
Mm-hmm.
And I would actually envision the healing process and declare, as you're saying, it's amazing how fast my liver is now focused on healing, and I'm envisioning a perfectly healed liver that's operating at 100%.
You know, we hear about sports athletes, professional athletes, who talk about playing through the pain. And they never really expand on that other than, well, everybody can identify with the fact that as a sports athlete, they have to deal with injuries, minor injuries, on a regular basis. Okay, but I wonder how many of them are actually doing what you were describing and what we were describing. In other words, treating the pain as a signal that they're making progress.
Yes. A lot of people use that technique. I know a lot of sports psychologists that believe in that as well. And it very much is a focus of when you understand it. There's several situations in Olympic moments, especially with a lot of the Asians that believe a lot like we believe about the control of the mind and what pain is. Pain is just part of the process. One young man had a broken foot and was competing in gymnastics and won a gold medal with a broken foot. And his point was, I'm not going to be able to be in another Olympics. He was probably too old to do it one more. This was my only shot, so I had to mentally dismiss the pain. And he actually said the pain became an ally, which drove him to win the gold medal.
Mm. I'm also reminded of the woman gymnast who very much did the same thing and who was famously carried onto the podium by her coach. Kelly or something or other. I can't remember what her last name was. But, just the same kind of thing. She was, she actually did perform, I think it was a floor routine with a sprained ankle. And she would finish on a hop because she couldn't land on 2 feet. But she finished her routine and helped the team win the gold medal.
But it's like the thought of right now when I'm working with clients or the affirmations that we're seeking today. You know, I don't know about tomorrow, and yesterday's sort of irrelevant.
Carrie, I'm sorry, Carrie Shrug, that was her name.
Yes, exactly. My mind is when I can live in right now, like if I'm dealing with pain. Right now, at this exact moment, that's the only moment that I have any control over is right now. At this exact moment, even though I may be in pain, I'm tolerating that pain at this exact moment.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to use that pain as a healing. To me, it's a healing sign. If I avoid the pain, I have to take longer to heal. That's my view. So I'm looking at my body. The pain is intended for my body to signal, this is where the problem is. Let's go attack it. Let's take all of our resources. Let's cut back on everything else, and let's go heal this pain. And that's a mental picture that I have when I'm healing pain.
And correct me if I'm wrong, the point here isn't to feel more pain.
No.
The point here is to actually minimize the importance of the pain so that when you're treating it as part of a healing factor, it actually reduces in your mind.
One of the concepts that, and this goes back to, pain is, and I could say this, because it's coming out very weird probably on the red, pain just is. Pain is part of the process. We as human beings have, sort of made pain a very negative. We have to medicate pain at all. People shouldn't suffer. These are terms that you hear all the time. I look at the animal kingdom. You know, if an animal kingdom's in the wild, you know, a lion gets his leg broke. Well, he either goes back and dies, or he just, okay, I got to keep walking with a limp. It isn't like there's a lot of discussion with the lions about what we're going to do about this broken leg. It just is.
Oh, yeah. I have a cat who has a bad leg and has from the moment that we rescued her. And we don't really know for sure what happened. We don't know if her leg was broken and just healed badly, or maybe it was just a birth defect. But as a result, one of her front legs is kind of curved inward, deformed in its shape, and so she walks awkwardly, and you can just see it in her shoulder. It's not a comfortable way to walk, but she doesn't think of it that way. That's the way she walks.
Well, we have assigned pain a big negative factor in our lives. That's become a very big negative factor for us. Pain, and if you go to the emergency room, they're not required to save your life, but they're required to get you out of pain. That's what's odd.
It's very odd, yes.
Yeah, and the concept that within, I have one guru that actually often told me, he said, pain is a necessary event in life. It's going to happen. Suffering from that pain is totally optional. And that's the difference of what pain... I envision, I will not suffer from pain any longer. I won't suffer from conditions any longer. I will feel conditions and I will acknowledge conditions, but I'm going to not suffer from any circumstance ever again. And that's a very, very big difference. A lot of people don't like that concept because they want to protect their suffering in some ways. And this isn't about anybody being bad, but the affirmation of...
Well, plus, there's another way to say the same thing, isn't there? One that perhaps might even make them feel better, which is instead of, I'm not going to... I don't remember how you phrased it, but I'm not going to allow the pain to be overwhelming me. Instead, it's the pain doesn't matter. The pain is not part of my thinking. Rather, what's part of my thinking is I'm feeling good, I'm feeling better, I'm feeling healthier, I'm getting more energy back, you know, and you... The brain can only focus on one thing at a time. So if you're focusing on that stuff, it can't focus on the pain.
Well, exactly. Well, my son TJ, my oldest son TJ, it was amazing. He did not feel pain. And when he would skateboard and we were eating dinner one night and he was actually eating a burger, and his left pinky was pointing the opposite direction of the rest of his fingers. Clearly, a compound fracture. Clearly. And I said, son, you've broken your hand. He goes, no, I think it's just a bad sprain. I'm like, no, it's flopping. It's not attached to anything but the skin's holding it on. And he's like, I said, does it hurt? And he goes, well, a little bit, but I'd rather go skateboarding. So, I'm like, we really need to go to the hospital with a compound fracture. And so I basically make him get in the car. We go, and this doctor knows TJ at the time very well because he was always amazed by it. And he just looked at it, he laughed, and he goes, TJ. And he was fascinated by TJ's lack of pain, but he explained to me, this is a lack of pain. It's TJ has developed in his mind, he won't process the pain. He won't, and if it came time to have like a minor surgery on the finger or something, you know, it was no big deal. TJ just never blinked.
He learned how to focus elsewhere, and because, I mean, from what you've hinted at, he had a pretty miserable early existence. He probably had to do that, so it was his defense mechanism.
Yes, he, back when he was a small child and wasn't being taken care of, he truly, whatever pain came along, he had no choice but to dismiss it. So he, as he got older, he just sort of learned to do that, and he did it. And again, he didn't realize he was doing it from a very positive way, but pain to him was an irrelevant event.
Mm-hmm.
It was something that just was, and it's no big deal. And I love the line, I'd rather go skateboard than get rid of the pain at this point. When we change our perspective of pain, and we use the positive affirmation of the pain of this is going to be part of the healing process, and I've used it in mental pain, I've used it in physical pain, and it's such an amazing tool when you understand it, because we've always been told almost to run from it or protect ourselves from it, or when in reality, it can be a vital part of the healing process if you adjust your perspective to it.
Yeah, think about that. I mean, since the brain can only handle one concept at a time, it really can't do multitasking like people think it can. It really can't. It's not capable of doing that. When he's focused totally on the skateboarding in that instance.
Yes.
As long as he maintains that focus, no matter what's going on with his hand, yeah, I could see how he would feel the pain. And really the good news is you don't have to go through all the traumas TJ went through in order to be in that position. I mean, frankly, I'm sure you could tell me other stories too. There are plenty of people who go through miserable situations who don't make the decision that TJ made. They make the decision to continue to wallow in the pain. And, of course, their lives become even more miserable as a result.
Well, you see this often. You know, one of my... in my practice, I deal with several people who have fibromyalgia, and that's a very that's a very nebulous diagnosis. It's certainly real. I'm not suggesting that it's not real, but it is a a pain that the doctors, it is severe pain that the doctors sort of have a theory about, but it's not really ever been, there's no way to really test for that pain.
Right, yeah.
And we have had tremendous success changing people's diet, and a lot of the positive affirmations that we're talking about of thinking, you know, of other directions about getting excited about life. And I had one client that I love what she said. She said, my fibromyalgia acts up when the rest of my life isn't going well.
Yes.
And I said, what does that tell you? And she was able to put the compound, you know, the compound way of thinking of maybe it's the tail wagging the dog. Maybe it's not the fibromyalgia is the problem. Maybe my body's manifesting this pain as a result from the rest of my life being out of balance. And that was a very awakening experience for her.
So if she were to make a meditation tape for herself that was designed to approximate what she does in her own mind anyway, or maybe she was going to make it for other people, other women who suffer from the symptoms of fibromyalgia, I wonder what her commentary would be. How would she express the positives in her own experience, and how would she say that on the tape, do you think?
Well, we did that, so it
her, you actually her, did that? Oh,
oh
really?
Yeah. Yes. That becomes the whole programming, the reprogramming of the concept that we started in the beginning of. Again, the I feel incredible. That we use very very uplifting words, you know, with a lot of power. I'm feel incredible. I no longer, we don't use pain in, we don't use the term pain in the affirmation. I feel very clear-headed. My life is going extremely well. I have great movement in my body. I'm looking forward to my future. And it's a redundancy of positive like that. And again, you don't pull a negative. She's not allowed to use the word pain. Like, she can't say I'm free of pain, because pain is actually a negative concept in her mind, in that way of thinking. Her thing is, I feel incredible. I feel powerful. We have a list of adjectives like that where you just keep going, but you never allow the negative stuff in.
It reminds me of an experience I had with myself. There was one point in my life early on in my exploration of the law of attraction, actually shortly after I read The Secret is when I ran into this. Before I'd read the book, I had developed this I'll call it a thing, on my left knuckle of my pinky finger. And I had occasion at one point to see a doctor about something else, and while I was there, I asked her about it. She said, oh, that's a cyst. She said, I mean, it's not a terrible thing or anything like that, but it's one of those things you should probably get taken care of at some point. You know, it's an in-office procedure, just, you know, a little quick surgery, get rid of it, because it can, under certain circumstances, turn to something worse. So, I mean, it's not likely to, but you should probably just get it taken care of at some point, and, you know, probably the sooner the better. Again, nothing to worry about, but, you know, you want to get that done because it won't go away on its own. Then I read The Secret and saw the movie, and I thought to myself, I wonder if I can use that to get rid of the cyst. So I started bombarding that cyst with all kinds of thoughts about getting rid of cysts, and of course it didn't go anywhere. It stayed right on my finger.
Right.
And then I had an inspiration. I said, you know what? I've got a knuckle on my right pinky that's completely free of a cyst. So instead of focusing on the cyst, I'm going to focus on my right pinky and say, you know what? That's the way my left pinky works. That's exactly how it looks. It's just kind of a mirror image, but it looks exactly like that. It's healthy. It's clean. It's, you know, it has no blemishes of any kind. Oh, nope, can't use blemishes. It's good looking. You know, it's clean skin and all that. I just kept focusing on that mental image. And within 2 weeks, the cyst was gone from my left finger.
Yeah. I see that a lot, and that, you know, as we look toward making a positive affirmation thought process, one of the rules is you can't incorporate the thing, the word, like I won't use, like you said, this lady had a condition with her liver. I don't use that word in any concept with anybody, and I tell people that, just because the you know, the C word, as I call it, it has a negative connotation that goes with it. I don't bring it into the environment at all.
Mm-hmm.
And I work with a lot of people that have that. And when we're talking, I tell them that we're going to remove that word from their vocabulary.
And let's focus for a moment why that's important. It's very important to not talk about the word or to focus on the word cancer or disease or anything else like that when you're trying to overcome it.
Right. Yes, because it actually gives power to it by almost not calling its name, by saying, no, I am healthy. I am building my health. I'm powerful. My body has the power to heal. My body is at a rapid healing pace. It is already healed, and I'm already looking forward the benefits of being healed. Again, it really is envisioning where you're going to be, just like you did with your knuckle. You actually took an example. Your body needed an example, and you gave it to, you know, like, okay, well, there's not one on this finger, and that's where my foot. So, you know, the rest of it comes along. I don't have a condition, you know, in the rest of my body. So the fact my liver has a thing going on is irrelevant. I don't have that in my body. That doesn't exist, and it really becomes a way of processing and not bringing a negative into the positive thinking. So when I have someone who is comes to me and pain is a driving force in their life, I have a lot of people that come that are dependent on opiates. They have injured their back, for example, and they're dependent on opiates, and they believe in the bottom of their heart that the opiates are controlling their pain. Mm. And they think that I can't get off of these. Well, some of these people have been on these opiates for 2 years. The injury has healed a long time ago.
Right.
And it is way done. It has not, but the opiates, believe it or not, keep the body convinced there's pain because there's now a dependent on the opiate. So working through that process is helping people understand that the shadow pain or the pain that exists in your head is, which all pain exists in your head, by the way, but in this case, it has no point of origin other than when you had the pain when you started taking the pills, and the pain did offer and the pills did offer temporary relief, but the area has healed. It's no longer hurting, but the mental side has been conditioned to continue to hurt. So the affirmation to start pulling ourselves off that is, and I do have people envision the area that is giving them pain as everything's rushing, your body is rushing healing power to that. Mm. All the enzymes and all the antibodies that are needed, all the repair, the growth hormone that the body's producing to heal that is all on full blast. It's saturating the area. It is healing at a rate that we didn't know was possible.
Which is a very cool way to express it and to look at it.
You know, right.
Something else occurred to me. You pointed out, and I pointed out, the importance of, you know, comparing it to comparing the injured or diseased body part to another body part that's healthy. But with a liver, you only have one liver. You know, with a kidney, you have two of them. But with a liver, you only have one. You only have one large intestine, one small intestine, one heart, and so on and so forth. What do you do in those cases? Well, we live in the age of the internet. We can easily look up a photo of a healthy liver or a healthy heart or a healthy digestive system. And we could actually print that out and put a label on it that says Jim's digestive system, Jim's liver, Jim's heart. And if you're Jim, you keep putting that picture in front of yourself, you're basically saying, this is the way I want my heart to look. This is the way I want my kidneys to look. This is the way I want my liver to look, my large intestine, my small intestine. You know, if you got skin cancer, then you get a picture of healthy skin. If you got no matter what your disease is, get something that's a picture of what it looks like when it's healthy. And then say, that's how I look. Lie to yourself. Actually tell yourself the lie that's the way I look, because it won't be a lie very long. It'll become the truth really soon.
It will. And those are amazing tools that we have. We live in an amazing time. I often hear people say we live in terrible times. I feel we live in amazing times. I have access to the entire universe's knowledge. It's on my phone. Everything I need, this is what you're talking about. I can pull up a picture of a healthy liver on my phone, a functioning liver. There are many illustrations. Harvard Medical, I'm sorry, has a lot of illustrations of, like, when a bone breaks, the healing process, and it's again, these are animations, but they're real, of how that I've had clients watch those videos of this. Is imagine this is your body focusing on it. Your body has the ability to do so much, and like you're saying, when you're focused on the healing aspect of it, that's where the energy is spent. When you're focused on the suffering and the pain of it, that's where your energy is spent. And that's such an awakening that you know, by looking at that healthy liver, by and also, again, I'm very big in nutrition, because nutrition, I think, supports the belief system. And you're also feeding the body the chemicals it needs to use in your positive affirmation. But a combination with that, you see amazing results, and people heal so much faster in hospitals where they implement this type thing.
Absolutely true. In fact, we should probably expand this even further and point out this applies in all areas of life. So it can apply, let's say you're an entrepreneur, it applies to building your business. The more that you can focus on healthy, successful, growing, expanding businesses, the more likely you're going to be able to do the same thing with your own business. It works with relationships. You're not in a relationship right now. You don't have that special someone in your life. Well, you can start focusing on special someones. I mean, how many people have actually found spouses by putting up pictures on the wall of the person they want to meet? And then very often they meet somebody who's very similar to that person. It's a very common phenomenon. Same thing true with careers. You want to develop your career. Maybe you're not an entrepreneur, but you do want to develop your career. And maybe you already know what it is you want to do, but you haven't gotten there yet. Well, you can focus on the people who have already gotten there. And if you don't know what you want to do, you can focus on getting the idea out there. Hey, I need some ideas of what would be fun for me to do. What would be really exciting and challenging? And like, oh, wow, I can hardly wait to get up every day. Now put it out to whatever your belief structure is, to God, the universe, the spirit world, whatever it might be, and say, hey, I need some ideas here. Give me some ideas. What would make me feel like, wow, that's something I want to pursue? And inevitably, the ideas will come to you. You have to be aware of them. You have to be alert for them. You have to be looking for them, but they will come.
Well, that's such a as we expand this line of reasoning, that's such a important point. You know, I often tell clients when I'm working with them, if you don't know what you want, what's your passion, what you're pursuing, if you don't know, until you do, go help somebody else find help who already have identified it, attain their goal.
Mm-hmm.
And that seems like what does that have to do? Because when you're in the process of doing that, you're in such a positive space when you're doing that. Your thoughts, the stuff comes to you much faster because you're in the mindset of helping. When you're in the mindset of helping somebody else achieve their goal, your ability to see your goal is so much clearer, and that's a very helpful tool. The idea of asking for, I need this clarity. I need to know what this next step is, and I need to be in the best mindset possible to see it. And when I'm helping somebody else who is passionate about what their goal is, then I'm going to be in a better mindset to see my own. So I encourage people, if you don't know what you're doing or what you want to do, find somebody who is passionate and sincere and really following what they want to do, and go and say, how can I help you attain your goal?
And I should also remember to talk about probably one of the few issues that people face that gets no attention at all. I mean, there are some that get minimal attention or that are hidden in the closet. But this is one that, to the best of my knowledge, never gets touched on. And it's one that I have suffered from in the past and still do to an extent. I am an introvert. And the more introverted you are, the less likely you are to want to take any kind of action to change these kinds of things, because you're so afraid of getting out there in the world. Which, of course, is self-defeating. It doesn't work that way. You got to get out there in the world if you want things to happen for the positive, for the good. So what do? If you're an introvert? Before I'm going to give my answer, I'm curious, if you were talking to an introvert, and correct me if I'm wrong, Joel, I don't think you've ever been an introvert in your life.
No, that is not one of my issues. But
no.
One of the things that I have actually had a very good friend he started out as a client, has become a very good friend, that he had a lot of social anxiety, and he was a severe introvert. Well, One of the processes that he went through, and by the way, I never knew that. And his response to me He said, "Well, it's sort of hard to be an introvert around you."
It's true. I can attest to that.
What I always encourage people who are introverts to do is find people who are not introverts that are very much into the processes that we're talking about, and surround yourself with those people. I always find out who you go to or who you hang out with. And I know that almost says, well, if I'm an introvert, I can't do that. But that is not the point. That's the piece we have to overcome, is when we can go, I quote unquote mentor several introverts that have, you, one of them used the term, I'm a recovering introvert. And it's the idea that it's not about right or wrong, it's simply about being willing to put yourself out there. But when you surround yourself with people who aren't introverts, or people that are at least were introverts and heading in that right direction, then you tend to be, you know, that's one of the best therapies. I call it immersion therapy when I'm dealing with it. And I have a group of people in several parts of the country that I can always refer people to and say, just go hang out with these people for a little while, and they will. And it's amazing. Mm-hmm. That's always my first line of defense of helping somebody see that. But then we do stuff within the office of, again, a lot of the positive affirmations of what I want is out there. What I'm needing is out there, and there's people that have what I need, and I want what those people have, and I have to get past this part of my life. It's been a barrier, and believe it or not, I happen to think being an introvert comes a lot from it. It's a strain. It's not always this. There's certainly personality types, but I think a lot of people can confuse. They've been beaten down in life, and they confuse being an introvert sometimes with, I don't want to take a risk again, and they get confused of the two.
I think there's some truth to that. I think more than that, introversion is a symptom of lack of confidence.
Yes.
So if you have, like you said, if you've been beaten down, gotten a lot of negativity, and you haven't already found a defense mechanism, a way to prevent that. Well, actually, your defense mechanism is to go into your shell.
Yes.
Rather than another kind of defense mechanism like TJ developed, where he just didn't even feel the pain.
Right.
It just wasn't even there. It wasn't part of his consciousness. Well, for an introvert to be challenged the way you're trying to challenge them, that probably works in a therapeutic context where you're sitting with them and you can encourage them and so forth. But for somebody like me, I wasn't in a therapeutic context. Might have helped if I had been, but the reality was I wasn't. So I tried the idea of, I got to get myself out there. I know how important it is. I mean, because I knew how important it was to get out there. And you know what? I couldn't do it. So here's what I did do. I said to myself, well, whenever I try to go out there, I end up being the wallflower, right? You know, I'll go to a party to try to get out there, and I just hang out in the wall anyway. I never talk to anybody. So it's almost as if I didn't even accomplish anything. So that doesn't work. So what can I do? And it began to dawn on me, people who get out there do things that they enjoy doing. I said, well, I wonder if I can think of anything I would enjoy doing. And maybe while enjoying doing something, maybe then I'll be faced with having to actually, you know, talk to somebody and maybe even utter a few words.
Right.
And so it took me quite some time to find something I would really like to do. I finally found it. That thing was swing dancing. I always thought, you know, swing dancing, you know, that's the partner dance, right? Where, you know, they're moving all over the place, under the arms, all this, you know, basically swing the partner around, all this kind of stuff. It looked really, really cool, and it looks like a wonderful dance. And, like, how on earth does he throw her around like that? Well, he's not actually throwing her around, but that's the way it looks. And I said, well, it would be really cool to learn how to do that, but I don't know if I could handle it. Well, within moments of, by moments I mean like within a few days of that, I saw a demonstration by a swing dance teacher.
Wow.
Ended up taking some classes with him, ended up joining 3 different organizations in the state where I was living, Connecticut, that's where I am now too, and all 3 of them were about swing dancing. And over the course of a couple of years, I was out swing dancing 4 or 5 nights a week as a single person. that did more for building my confidence than anything else I've ever done. And I did it by not going out there for the purpose of trying to break my introversion, but rather by going out with a purpose of finding a way to have fun. And, oh, by the way, I actually became a pretty good leader, because usually the male is the leader in swing dancing. It can go either way, but that's usually the way it's done. And so I had to learn how to be a leader. Well, I took a lot of classes to do that, but I became really good at it, to the point where I had a brand new experience in my life. Women were coming up to volunteer to dance with me. I can't tell you what kind of a new experience that was, because I had never had women come up to talk to me before. That was just not part of my life. And now all of a sudden, out of the blue, it was happening.
Well, and you did your version of immersion therapy. You found something you loved, and you immersed yourself in it. And then within that, because it was something you care about and were passionate about, you were able to go do it. I think that's such an incredible self-diagnostic in the way you referred yourself to yourself, in a sense. You went out and you said, this is what I love, this is how I'm going to overcome it, and then it can translate to other areas. I mean, I've gone to a lady friend of mine drugged me to a party in Manhattan where it was a bunch of art dealers, and they were talking about classical art. Well, no disrespect to anyone in our audience, that, on my scale of interest, it isn't measurable.
It's about a minus six, huh?
Exactly. Yeah. So here you have 15 people there, and then you have me. So in that moment, it wasn't because I'm an introvert. I had zero in common with I had no point of reference. Now, I wasn't uncomfortable. I was doing it. I was there for my friend, and she loved it, so I'm glad she did. But I probably didn't say five words, believe it or not, that night.
Because I believe it. And in a sense, for a moment there, you actually perhaps experienced a little bit of what it's like to be introverted.
Exactly.
Because you had nothing to say.
I had nothing to say. And being so comfortable with who I am, it didn't bother me. But I, you know, like somebody would ask me, you know, what is, I don't even know how to word the questions that they ask me. I just smiled and said, I'm just here to support my friend. I don't even know the words you're saying.
You would know the difference between a Cezanne and a say what.
Exactly. But yet every year, I mean, there are several years that I've gone up to. I'm very much into weightlifting and powerlifting. They have the Arnold Classic in Columbus, Ohio, in March. Well, you know, my sons usually would go with me. But there's been a couple years I just went by myself and wandered around and had wonderful conversations with hundreds of people over a course of 3 days. And people I've never met before, because it was a point of interest of mine. And, you know, we become, and again, the affirmation is attached to all of the stuff that we're trying to get to, is inside of us is a perspective. There's always, no matter what we're dealing with, there's always going to be a perspective that lends itself to the positive and a perspective that lends itself to the negative. And each week we're talking about things that, when we have the tendency toward the negative, what we're inviting is the negative. If it's a case of pain, if it's a case of healing, if it's a case, it's how we're looking at it. When I had my surgery, was I in pain or was I in healing? I never use the word I'm in pain. I always use the word I'm in healing. And I substitute the word, and it seems silly to people. So why don't you just say pain when you're in pain? I'm not giving any power to the word. I'm in healing. And I reframed it and take the pain away. You know, you're supposed to wait 2 weeks before you go, minimally 2 weeks, 4 weeks, you said, to go to the gym. 4 days after my gallbladder was out, I was in the gym doing light work again. He wasn't happy about that, but it was, again, I wasn't doing a lot of weight, but it was just me getting back about a perspective. What we have, when you're facing, you know, we're facing challenges, the positive affirmation, it comes from within, but within the positive affirmation, we have to leave out the negative. If, you know, we don't say in a positive affirmation, I am no longer in pain, that's not a positive affirmation. That's an acknowledgement of the pain. I am healthy. I feel amazing. I haven't felt this good since I've been 30. if you're 30, you haven't felt this good since ever. It doesn't get any better than 30, so you have no point of living to 30. But you know, you get to a place where you can say, this is how I feel, and then the mind, when the mind believes it, the body then has to come with you that way.
It's interesting you say that, because 30 for me was actually a traumatic age, but I won't go into that for, we'll save that for another show. Yeah, but we've only got a few minutes left, and I really wanted to touch on this. So before we run out of time, when you were a kid, when you were growing up, before you discovered the law of attraction, before you were, you know, eating out of the dumpster and all that, what messages do you wish you had heard more of when you were growing up?
I would love to have heard, things are wonderful in our lives. We have an amazing life. I would like to hear about what we did have. I would love to have heard reinforcers of my strengths in athletics. I would love to have heard, boy, you're really good at that. As an artist, I would love to have heard, boy, that was really good. You've really done a good job with that. And anywhere in these areas, as a kid, I would like to have seen somewhere something brought to the table without limitations.
Mm.
The idea that never mentioned, I know we're talking about what we wanted to hear, not what we didn't want to hear, but about there's really nothing that is off limits to you. You have the ability to achieve anything you want, but really mean that, because people always say it and then take that away. We really... whatever you want to be, you can be. At 8 years old, there is zero limits in your world right now. Zero.
Or even at 16 years old, or
20 years old. At 16, or when you're at 50. But especially then, when the mind's forming and we have that brain that's just trying to, it's observing everything. And then even when you hear that you can do anything, but yet you watch watch somebody else demonstrate, no, we can't do that, we're trapped in this situation, it's a reverse message. So it needs to be a clear, consistent, not only would I want to hear the message to me, I would love to have witnessed the message being displayed in front of me. That was probably more of a factor than there wasn't as much negative talk to me as I would see the negative results when my mom was... she had a gas bill one time, or I'm sorry, insurance bill one time that was $50 more than she was expecting. She broke down and she cried.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I understand she's raising two kids, she's in the situation like that, but in reality, you know, I was like, oh my God, I mean, could $50 cause that much turmoil? Versus if she'd have gotten the bill, opened it up, so, oh yeah, no, and then if she'd had to go cry in private, that would have been her thing. But to me, that was, I remember that so clearly. So, the idea, I would love to have seen more of just a reinforcer of you're not less than anyone else. This is an amazing time for you. There's no limits. Look at what kind of brain you have. You have an incredible brain that can allow you to do whatever you want to do. And that limit, and the limitations that you think are there, at eight, there shouldn't be any limitations you think anyway. And it really is something that you can do. Have you thought about what you would want to hear when you were a kid?
Yeah, I'd like to hear not just what could be done, but what I'm actually doing right now and what we're as a family doing right now and, you know, what's going on in my life right now. Things like good things are happening right now. You know, really exciting things are happening. You're doing some very exciting things, and you're doing A, B, C, and D, and wow, that's really amazing, really fantastic. You're still trying to figure out what your dreams are, and that's terrific. That's a wonderful thing, because now the whole world is open up to you. Not oh my God, you got to come up with something soon, but wow, look at all the possibilities that are open to you. This is really amazing. This is a fantastic time. I would have liked to have heard positive messages about money. You know, don't worry about what the money's doing right now. Your money's going to be flowing into your life. You're just going to be so incredibly successful. I would have liked to have heard things that say, you know, messages that say, you're incredibly athletic. Now, you have to understand, I'm a very tall, very thin person, and had no athletic skill by traditional standards. I would have loved to have people tell me, you have amazing athletic potential, and you're starting to show it right now. If you keep going with it, those are the kinds of messages I would have loved. But Joel, it's been a pleasure as usual.
Walt, great to talk to you this week.
And we'll talk to you all again next time here on LOA Today. Goodbye, everybody. It might seem crazy what I'm
about